This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. President Trump has said we can expect a big announcement about the opioid crisis this week. It's widely expected he'll declare a national emergency. But what are the tools that we have available to fight opioid addiction? And what else could we perhaps look for from the science community? Joining me now is Dr. Jeffrey Baxter. He is an associate professor at the University of Massachusetts Medical School and the chief medical officer for the Spectrum Health Systems Network of Opioid Addiction Treatment Programs and Detoxification Centers in central Massachusetts. He's also working with the National Institute on Drug Abuse on ways to educate healthcare providers about the safer use of opioid medications. Welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thank you very much.
What recommendations do you give doctors at this point about prescribing opioids?
Really, that opioids are a class of medications that have the potential for great pain relief, but also significant risks. And so when we prescribe, we need to make sure that we carefully select, the patients to whom we're prescribing, and that we do a good job of advising patients of the pros and cons, and then that we monitor patients to make sure they're not developing any of the negative side effects or negative consequences that could come from their use.
When we talk about, medications that are available for pain relief, there are over-the-counter medications like Tylenol or Advil, right? But then once you get to the prescription painkillers, it kind of seems like everything is an opioid. Are there non-opioid alternatives? And if not, why not?
There are non-opioid alternatives, but they are not as strong as the opioid. So the World Health Organization publishes what it calls its pain treatment ladder, and it recommends a graduated approach using less potent pain medications with less danger for more minor pain and the more potent meds for more severe pain. So there are some non-opioid meds that have been developed that target specific types of pain, like pain that comes from irritated nerves called neuropathic pain. But in general, if you have severe pain, the opioids are really the most effective option, short of actual general anesthesia, which you can't take at home, which really knocks you out, if you know what I mean.
General anesthesia is definitely not a long-term solution to chronic pain.
Exactly.
We've also been hearing more about non-pharmaceutical ways to address chronic pain in particular, that things like meditation and mindfulness may be part of the toolbox for dealing with this. Is that something that you're talking with doctors about as well?
Absolutely. And I think the first thing I should say is that there's a lot of evidence that non-medication modalities can be very effective, especially for patients that accept them and that have the resources to access them. I think what you run into is that physicians have very little of those modalities available to themselves. And patients can get great relief, but it usually depends on the patients themselves going outside of the medical system to access things like massage and physical therapy and good physical training and really committing the time and the resources it takes for those modalities to help.
I'm talking with Dr. Jeffrey Baxter of UMass Medical School and Spectrum Health Systems about pain and addiction treatment. There's also been some work on making opioid painkillers less addictive, either, making time-release formulations that you can't just break open and ingest all at once, or adding other chemicals, other medications to the formulation that block opioids from getting to the receptors in the brain. Where do those kinds of modified opioid efforts stand? Are those alternatives on the market and available to doctors now?
There are a few that have been developed and approved, but I don't want to overestimate the impact that those will have on abuse. They are still opioid medications, and really the only thing that they prevent is somebody crushing up those medications and using them in a way that they weren't meant to be made, for example, injecting them or inhaling them. But you can still swallow them, and they are still opioids, so they are still physically addicting and have the potential for abuse.
We heard a couple of months ago, though, about efforts actually to develop an opioid vaccine. First of all, how would that work? And realistically, it's been one of those things where some people have said this would be really amazing, and others have said this is never really going to pan out its pie in the sky. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think the easiest way to talk about that would be to think of what the gold standard would be. If we could develop a vaccine against specifically, let's say, heroin, a vaccine that identified heroin when it entered your body and basically neutralized it, that would be an incredibly powerful tool. But what that requires is being able to train your body's immune system to recognize heroin and only heroin so that it doesn't accidentally block out other things in your body that you want to be there. And I think that that's really the challenge, is being able to trigger your body to recognize those things you don't want there and helping it be specific enough so that it doesn't accidentally recognize other things that you do want.
Well, and if we had a vaccine, say, that were more broadly against opioids, that would also then mean that those medications wouldn't work as pain medications, right?
That's exactly right. And that's the problem we run into with some of the available treatments for opioid use disorders, is that they really block out everything. And if you need pain medications for, let's say, surgery or recovery from an injury, they block out those medications as well.
My guest is Dr. Jeffrey Baxter of UMass Medical School and the Spectrum Health Systems Network of Opioid Addiction Treatment Programs and Detox Centers. So let's talk about some of those treatments that are available. Do all of these medications basically work in the same way to treat addiction?
So there are two general classes of medications that are available to help people with opioid use disorders now, and they're either antagonists at the receptor, the opioid receptors, which means they block opioids out, they antagonize the receptor, or they're agonists at the receptor, which means they get on the receptors and activate them or stabilize them. So the most common agonists that stabilize the receptors are methadone and buprenorphine. And then the antagonists that are available are Narcan, which is used to reverse overdose, and naltrexone, which is a longer acting version of the blocker.
And the methadone and buprenorphine that you say kind of stabilize the receptor, what does that mean in terms of if someone then were to take opioids of some sort, how would the body respond?
So they really stabilize the withdrawal that comes after people have been exposed to opioids for a longer period of time, where their body adapts to it, and then patients get quite sick when they don't have opioids. And that's the benefit of it. When you take other opioids on top of methadone or buprenorphine, it really can be an additive effect, meaning that you end up stacking opioids together, and it could put patients at increased risk for overdose. Buprenorphine is a little more protective against that because it more tightly binds to the receptor and blocks out other opioids more effectively than methadone does. But in general, the risk of combining them would be an increased risk of being sedated or having an overdose.
There's a lot of evidence that medically assisted treatment is effective for helping individuals with opioid use disorders. What are some of the obstacles to getting wider spread medical assisted treatment? And do you think that's the direction that we should be trying to head at this point?
Well, in terms of your direction question, I mean, when you have treatments that have proven to be effective, then I think, you know, the first step is to make sure that you're using those effective treatments as widely and reaching as many people as possible. The barriers are a couple, as you might expect. There's cost involved with any sort of treatment. The medications have to be delivered either through a doctor's office or through a program that's approved to deliver the medications. And you basically have to have programs that are near you and that are convenient enough that you can participate in those programs. So, you know, it's having them available where you are, it's being able to pay for them, and it's being able to access them that really, you know, makes a treatment, an effective treatment, more helpful to the wider society.
Do you think we have the policies in place at the moment to make sure that medically assisted treatment can't get to, as you said, the widest possible use within the community of those who need it?
We have many policies in place, and we've made a lot of progress. And I'll just point out that, you know, Massachusetts is actually a very different environment than much of the rest of the country. But for example, buprenorphine treatment can be delivered in any sort of office setting. That's a new advance in policy that came into place in the early 2000s. And there's a lot of work going on at the state level to increase the number of offices that offer that treatment. It's much more convenient than having to go to a structured methadone program. The state of Massachusetts and its Medicaid program are very supportive of all kinds of medically assisted treatment. But, you know, there are patients even in Massachusetts who still, you know, might have to drive an hour or 2 hours to access treatment. And then as you get out into the more, you know, the more distant areas, maybe way out into the Cape or off onto the islands, you have significant transportation barriers to being able to access care.
You've been working in the area of addiction medicine for 2 decades. How have you been feeling the past few years as you watch and respond to this crisis, which seems to be only getting worse and worse?
How else can I say it except that we thought we had a crisis 15 years ago when 2 people a day were dying in Massachusetts from opiate overdoses. And there's just been an incredible rise in the last 4 to 5 years in the horrible impact that this has had on people in Massachusetts. So, you know, we have pushed ourselves to keep up and expand treatment availability to meet the needs of people across the state. Spectrum itself has doubled the number of programs that it has around the state. But it feels like you're a little like you're bailing water out of a sinking boat. You know, you keep trying to catch up, but the problem is still getting worse. And we're going to keep fighting. It does feel like an uphill battle.
Dr. Jeffrey Baxter of UMass Medical School and Spectrum Health Systems, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.